Varney the Vampire, or the Feast of Blood. Chapter 1. Midnight, the Hailstorm, the Dreadful Visitor, the Vampire. Solemn tones of an old cathedral clock have announced midnight. The air is thick and heavy. A strange death-like stillness pervades all nature. The anonymous calm which precedes some more than usual terrific outbreak of elements. They seem to pause even in their ordinary flatulations to gather terrific strength for the great effort. Faint peal of thunder now comes from afar off, like a signal gun for the battle of the winds to begin. Peers awaken them from their lethargy, and one awful roaring hurricane swept over the whole city, producing more devastation in 4 or 5 minutes it lasted than was half a century ordinary phenomena. It was as if some great bat had flown down upon some toy town and scattered many of the buildings for the hot blast of his terrific breath. As suddenly as that blast of wind had come, did it cease, and all was as still and calm as before. Sleepers awakened, and thought what they heard must be confused chimera of a dream. They trembled and turned to sleep again. All is still as a very grave. Not a sound breaks the magic of repose. What is that? A strange pattering noise, as of a million of fairy feet. It is hell. It's a hailstorm that bursts over the city. Leaves that dash from the trees, mingle with small burrows. Windows that lie most opposed to the direct fury of the pelting particles of ice are broken. Racked repose that before was remarkable. Intensity was exchanged for noise, which is a combination, drowns every cry of surprise or consternation, which here and there arose of persons who found their houses invaded by the storm. Now and then, there came a sudden gust of wind. In its strength, as it blew literally, would for the moment hold millions of the hailstones, suspended them in air, but it's only to dash them with redoubled force in such new direction, where more mischief was to be done. Oh, how the storm raged! Hell, rain, wind. It was, in very truth, an awful night. There's an end creek chamber in an ancient house. Curious and quaint carvings adorn the walls, large chimney piece, in the courtesy of itself. The ceiling's low, large bay window from roof to floor. Looks to the west, the windows are teased and filled with curiously painted grass and rich day pieces were sent in strange yet beautiful light. The sun and moon shines into the apartment. There is but one portrait in that room. Though the walls seem panelled for his express purpose of containing a series of pictures, that portrait of it is of a young man, a pale face, a stately brow, a strange expression about the eyes, which no one cared to look on twice. There is a stately bed in that chamber of carved wood, is which it is made, rich in design, elaborate in execution. One of these works of art, which all in existence of little beef and arrow, is hung heavy silken and damask furnishing. Nodding feathers are at its corners. Covered with dust are they. They led a funeral aspect to the room. The floor is of polished oak, God, how the whole world dashes on the old bay window like an occasional discharge, a mimic masquerade. It comes crashing, beating, cracking by the small panes, but if they resist it, a small size saves them. The wind, the hail, the rain, it spend their fury in vain. The bed in that old chamber is occupied, creature folded all fashions of loneliness. Loveliness lies in the half asleep upon that ancient crouch. A girl, young and beautiful, the spring morning, her long hair has escaped from its confinement and steams over the blackened coverings of the bedstead, giving restless and not asleep. The clothing of the bed is much confusion. One arm is over her head, the other hangs nearly off the side of the bed, near to which she lies, a neck and bosom that would have formed a study the rarest sculptor every province gave genius to, were half his clothes. He moaned slightly in his sleep, and once or twice the lips moved as if in prayer. At least one might judge so, for the name of him who suffered for all came once faintly from them. She endured much fatigue, and the storm does not awaken her, but it can disturb her slumbers. If it does not possess the power, destroy it entirely. Turmoil of elements wakes the senses, although it cannot entirely break the repose they have lapsed into. Oh, what a world of witchery was in that mouth, slightly parted in its vitreous, exhibiting within it the pearly teeth, and glistened even the faint light that came from that bay window. Her sweetly long silken violettes lay upon the cheek. Now she moves, and one shoulder is entirely visible. Whiter, fairer, the spotless clothing of the bed which she lies. Smooth skin of a fair creature, just budding into womanhood in that transition state which presents to us all the charms of the girl, almost as a child, with the more matured beauty and gentleness of advancing years. Was that lightning? Yes, an awful, vivid, terrifying flash. A roaring peal of thunder, as if a thousand mountains were rolling one off the other in the blue vault of heaven. One sleeps now in the ancient city, not one living soul, a dread trumpet of eternity, could not more effectually awaken anyone. Hell continues. The wind continues. The uproar of the elements seems at its heights. Then she awakens. A beautiful girl on the antique bed. He opens those eyes with celestial blue. A faint cry of alarm bursts from her lips. Alas, it is a cry, which amid the noise of turmoil, without sounds but faint and weak, she sits on bed, presses her hand upon her eyes. Heavens, what a wild torrent of wind, rain and hail, thunder likewise, seems intent upon awakening. Significant echoes of to last until the next flash of thought lightning should again produce the wild concussion of the air. She murmurs a prayer for those she loves best, names whose dear to her gentle heart came from her lips. She weeps and prays. She thinks then of that what devastation the storm must surely produce, and to the great God in heaven she prays for all living things. Love flash, wild blue, bewildering flash of steel, light steam streams across the bay, a bay window where instant green at every colour in it with terrible distinctness. A shriek bursts from the lips of the young girl. Then with the eyes fixed upon that window, which in another moment is all darkness, and it is such an expression of terror upon her face that it never before known, she trembled, perspiration, intense fear, stood upon her brow. What is it? She gasped, real or a delusion? Oh God, what is it? A figure tall and gaunt, endeavouring from the outside and unclasped the window. I saw it, the flash of lightning, revealed it to me. It stood the whole length of the window. There was a lull, the wind, the hail, not falling so thickly. Moreover, it now fell, what there was of it, straight, and yet a strange clattering sound came upon the glass of that long window. It could not be delusion. She's awake. She hears it. What can produce it? Another flash of lightning? Another shriek? There could be no delusion. A tall figure was standing on the ledge, immediately outside the long window. Its fingernails upon the glass produces a sound so like the hail. Now the hail has ceased. Intense fear paralyzed the limbs of that beautiful girl. That one shriek, all she can utter. Hands clasped, a face of marble, heart beating so wildly in the bosom. Each moment, it seems as if it would break its confines, eyes distended, and fixed upon the window. She wakes, froze with horror, a pattering and clattering of the nails to continue. That word is spoken. Now she fancies she can tackle the darker form, the figure against the window, and she can see the long arms moving to and fro, fearing for some mode of entrance. What strange light is which now gradually creeps up into the air. Red and terrible, brighter and brighter it grows. Lightning has set fire to the mill. Reflection of rapidly consuming building falls upon the long window. There can be no mistake. A figure is there, still filling for an entrance, a clattering against the glass, with long nails that appear as if a growth of many years had been untouched. He cries and screams again. A choking sensation comes over her. She cannot. It's too dreadful. She tries to move. Every limb seems weighed down by tons of lead. She can but, in a hoarse faint whisper, cry, "Help! Help! Help!" And that one word she repeats like a person in a dream. The red glare of fire continues. Throws up the tall, blunt figure in hideous relief against the long window. Shows, too, upon the one portrait. And in the chamber, that portrait appears to fix its eyes upon the tempted intruder, while the flickering light from the fire makes it look fearfully lifelike. A small pane of glass is broken, introduces a long, gaunt hand, which seems utterly desolate of flesh. Fastening was moved. One half the window, which opens like folding doors, swung wide upon its hinges. Yet now, she could not scream. She could not move. "Help, help, help," was all she could say. Oh, that look of terror that sat upon her face. It was dreadful. A look to haunt the memory of a lifetime. Look to obtrude itself upon the happiest moments and turn them to bitterness. The figure turns half around. The light falls upon the face. It's perfectly white, perfectly bloodless. The eyes look like a polished tin. The lips are drawn back. The principal feature next to these, those dreadful eyes, is the teeth. The fearful looking teeth, projecting like those of some wild animal, hideously glaring white, fang-like. He approaches the bed with a strange gliding movement, clashes together the long nails that literally appear to hang from the finger ends. No sound comes from its lips. Is she going mad? That young and beautiful girl exposed to so much terror. She's drawn up all her limbs. She cannot even say help. Power articulation has gone. Now the power of movement has returned to her. She can draw herself slowly along the other side of the bed from that towards which the hideous appearance is coming. But her eyes are fascinating. The glance of a serpent could not have produced a greater effect upon her than did the fixed glare glance, that awful, metallic-looking eyes that were bent on her face, crouching down so that the gigantic height was lost. Horrible, protruding white face was a prominent object. Came on the figure. What was it? What did it want there? What did it look? Why? What made it look so hideous? So unlike to have the earth, yet to be on it. Now, as she's got to the verge of the bed, the figure pauses. It seems as if when it pulls, she lost the power to proceed. Clothing in the bed was now clutched in her hands, conscious power. She drew a breath short and thick. Her bosom heaves, her lips tremble. Yet she cannot withdraw her eyes from that marble-looking face. Holds her with his glittering eye. The storm has ceased. All is still. The winds are hushed. The church clock proclaims the hour one. Hissing sound comes from the throat. Hideous being. He raises his long, gaunt arms. The lips move. He advances. The girl places one small foot from the bed onto the floor. She is constantly dragging the clothing with her. The door of the room is that in that direction. Can she reach it? Has she the power to walk? Can she draw her eyes to the face of the intruder so to break the hideous charm? God of heaven, it is real, or some dream, so like reality as to nearly overturn judgment forever. The figure was paused again, half on the bed, half out of it. The young girl lies trembling. Her long hair streams across the entire width of the bed. As she slowly moved along, she is left it streaming across the pillows. Pause lasted about a minute. Oh, what an age of agony. A minute was indeed enough for madness to do its work, full work in. The sudden rise, that could not be foreseen. A strange hunting cry, enough to waken terror in every beast. Figure seized the long tresses of her hair, twining them around his bony hands. He held her to the bed. Then she screamed. Heaven granted her that then power to scream, shriek, followed shriek and rubbish recession. The bedclothes fell in a heap of the side of the bed. He was dragged by her long silken hair completely onto it again. The beautiful round limbs quivered with the agony of her soul. The glassy, horrible eyes of the figure ran over the energetic form, hideous satisfaction. Horrible profanation. He drags her head to the bed's edge. He forces it back by long hair, still entwined in his grasp. A plunging, he seizes the neck, his fang-like teeth. A gush of blood, a hideous sucking sound follows. The girl was swooned, and the vampire is at his hideous repulse. Chapter 2, The Alarm, The Pistol Shot, Pursuit and Its Consequences. Lights flashed about the building, various room doors opened. Voices called, one to the other. There was a uniform stir, commotion among the inhabitants. Did you hear a scream, Harry? Asked a young man, half-dressed, as he walked into the chamber, or the other, by his own age. I did. Where was it? God knows, I've dressed myself directly. All is still now. Yes, but unless I was dreaming, there was a scream. We could not both dream there was. Where did you think it came from? It burst so suddenly upon my ears, I could not say. The tap nail on the door of the room where these young men were. A female voice said, for God's sake, get up. We're up, said both the young men appearing. Did you hear anything? Yes, a scream. Search the house. Where did it come from? Can you tell? Indeed, we cannot, mother. Another person now joined the party. He was a man of middle age, came up to them and said, good God, what is the matter? Guess he had the words past his lips when such a rapid succession of shrieks came upon their ears. They felt absolutely stunned by them. The other lady, one of the young men, called Mother, fainted and would have fallen to the floor of the corridor in which they all stood, had she not been promptly supported by the last comer, who himself staggered. Those piercing cries came upon the air. He, however, was the first to recover, for the young man seemed paralysed. "Henry," he cried, "for God's sake, support your mother. Can you doubt that those cries came from Fiona's room?" The young man mechanically supported his mother, and then the man who had just spoken darted back to his own bedroom, from whence he returned in a moment with a pair of pistols and shouting, "Follow me, who can." He banded across the corridor in the direction of the antique apartment, from whence his cries proceeded, but which were now hushed. The house was built for strength. The doors were all of oak, and of creditable thickness, and happily had fastened within. So when the man reached the chamber of her with so much required help, he was helpless, for the door was fast. "Fiona! Fiona!" he cried. "Fiona, speak!" All was still. "Good God!" he added. "You must force the door." "I hear a strange noise within," said the young man, who trembled violently. "And so do I. So do I. "What does it sound like?" "I scarcely know, but it's nearest resembles some animal eating or sucking some liquid." "What on earth can it be? Have you no weapon that you force the door? I shall go mad if I'm kept here." "I have," said the young man. "Wait here a moment." He ran down the staircase and presently returned with a small but powerful iron crowbar. "This will do," he said. It will. Give it to me." "Has she not spoken?" "Not a word. My mind misgives me that something very dreadful must have happened to her. And that odd noise still goes on, and somehow it curdles the very blood of my veins to hear it." Man took the crowbar and so deftly succeeded in reducing it between the door and the side of the wall. She had required great strength to move it, and it did move with a harsh, cracking sound. "Push it," he cried. He who was using the bar, "push the door at the same time." The young man did so. For a few moments, as the door resisted, then something gave way with a solid snap. It's part of the lock. Door at once swung wide and open. How true it is, we measure time by the events for which happened within a given space of it, rather than by its actual duration. To those who have engaged in forcing open the door of the antique chamber where slept the young girl, whom they named Fiona, each moment swelled into an hour of agony, but in reality, from the first moment of alarm and to that when the loud, cracking noise heralded the destruction of fastenings of a door, there had elapsed very few minutes indeed. It opens, cried the young man. "Another moment," said the stranger, as he still plied the crowbar. "Another moment, we shall have free ingress to the chamber. Be patient." Stranger's name was Marchdale. Even as he spoke, he succeeded in throwing the door wide open and clearing the passage to the chamber. To rush in with light in his hand was the work of a moment of a young man named Henry, but the very rapid progress he made into the apartment prevented him from observing accurately what had contained, for the wind coming in from the open window caught the flame of the candle. Though it did not actually extinguish it, it blew so much on one side it was practically useless as a light. "Fiona? Fiona," he cried. Then with sudden bound, something dashed off the bed. Concussion between him was so sudden, so utterly unexpected, as well as tremendously violent. He was thrown down. In his fall, the light was fairly exhausted, extinguished. All was darkness, save a dull, reddish kind of light. And now and then, from the nearly consumed meal, immediate vicinity came into the room. But by the light, dim and certain and flickering as it was, someone was seen to make for the window. Henry alone, already stunned by his fall, saw a figure gigantic in height, which nearly reached from the floor to the ceiling. The old man George saw it. Mr. Marchdale likewise saw it, as did the lady who had spoken to the two young men in the corridor when first the screams of the young girl awakened an alarm in all the breasts of the inhabitants of that house. But he was about to pass out of the window, which led to a kind of balcony, from whence there was an easy descent to a garden. Before it passed out, that they each little caught a glance of the side face, and he saw the lower part of it, the lips were dabbled in blood. He saw too that one of the most fearsome looking shining metallic eyes, which was presented so terrible an appearance of unearthly ferocity. No wonder that for a moment the panic seized them all, with paralyzed any exertions that might otherwise have made to detain that hideous form. But Mr. Marchdale was a man of mature years, been seen much of his life, both in this and his foreign lands. He was, though astonished, instead of being frightened, was much more likely to recover sooner than his young companions, which indeed he did, and has acted promptly enough. "Don't rise, Henry," he said, cried. "Lie still." Almost at the moment he uttered these words, he fired at the figure, which was then occupied the window. "Is this a gigantic frame set into a fair frame? Figure? Gigantic figure into frame, set of frame. The port was tremendous in that chamber. The pistol was no toy weapon, but one made of actual service, 7 foot length, and bore a barrel to carry destruct along with the bullets that came for it. If they had missed its aim, said Mr. Marchdale, I'd never pull a trigger again. As he spoke, he dashed forward, made a clutch at the figure as he felt convinced he had shot. A tall form turned upon him. When he got in full view of the face, which he did at that moment, with an opportune circumstance of the lady returning at an instant with the light she had been to her own chamber to procure, even he, Miff Marchdale, with all his courage, as that was great, all his nervous energy, but called a step or two at the exclamation of "Great God!" The face was one never to be forgotten. He essentially flushed with colour of fresh blood, the eyes of a savage and remarkable lustre, whereas before they looked like polished tin. Now they wore a 10 times bright aspect, and flashes light seemed to dart about from them, and mouth was open, as if from natural formation, countenance, the lips receded much from the large canine-looking teeth. Strange howling noise came from the throat of the misanthropic figure. It started upon the point of rushing upon Mr. Marchdale. Suddenly then, with some impulse, and seized upon it, it uttered a wild and terrible shrieking kind of laugh, and then turning, dashed through the window, in one instant disappeared from before the eyes of those who felt nearly annihilated by its fearful presence. "God help us," calculated Henry. Mr. Marchdale drew a long breath, and then, giving a stamp on the floor, as if to cover himself from a state of agitation to which even he was thrown, he cried, "Be what or who it may, I'll follow it." "No, no, do not," cried the lady. "I must, I will. Let you, who will come with me? I follow that dreadful form." As he spoke, he took to the road. He took dash through the window into Bulkley. "Me, we will too," but George exclaimed angrily. "We will follow Mr. Marchdale. This dreadful affair concerns us more nearly than it does him. Lady, the mother, those young men, and the beautiful girl have been so awfully visited, screamed aloud, implored of them to stay. The voice of Mr. Marchdale is heard screaming loudly. "I see it, I see it. It makes for the wall. Is it no longer, but once rushed in the balcony, said Bradley. And then dropped into the garden. Mother approached the bedside when sensible. Perhaps the girl. She saw her to all her parents weltering in blood, an outcome of her emotions. She fainted on the floor of the room. When the two young men reached the garden, he found it much lighter than the night been fairly expected. For not only was the morning rapidly approaching, the meal was still burning. Those mingled lights made almost every object very plainly visible, set when deep shadows were thrown from some giant trees stood for centuries in that sweetly wooded spot. They heard the voice of Mrs. Marchdale, and he cried, there, towards the wall, there, God, now it bounds along. The young men hastily brushed through the thicket in the direction from whence the voice sounded, and when they found him, looking wild and terrified, something in his hand, which looked like a portion of clothing. Which way, they cried in a breath. He leant heavily on the arm of George. He pointed along a visitor of trees and said in a low voice, God help us all, it's not human. Look there, do you not see it? He looked in the direction he indicated. A elevator, VTA, the wall of the garden. At a point it was full 12 feet in height. He looked, they saw the hideous creepy monstrous form traced from the chamber of his sister, making frantic efforts to clear the obstacle. Then they saw it bound from the ground, top of the wall, which is very neatly reached, and then each time it fell back again in the garden with such a dull and heavy sound, the earth seemed to shake again with the concussion. They trembled. Very well, indeed they might, and for some minutes they watched the figure, making its fruitless efforts to leave the place. What? What is it? Said Henry, in a hoarse accent. God, what can it possibly be? I know not, replied Mr. Marchdale. I did seize it. It was cold and clammy like a corpse. It cannot be human. Not human? Look at it now. It was surely escaped now. No, we will not be terrified thus. There is heaven above us. Come on, and for dear Fiona's sake, let us make an effort yet to seize this bold intruder. Take this pistol, said Mr. Marchdale. It's a fellow one. I fired. Try its efficiency. He will be gone, exclaimed Henry. At this moment, after many repeated attempts of fearful falls, the figure reached the top of the wall and hung his long arms at a moment, the two previous, to drag itself completely up. The idea of the appearance, being what it might, entirely escaping, seemed to nerve again Mr. Marchdale, as he, as well as two young men, and forward towards the wall. They got so close to the figure before it sprung down to the other side of the wall that to miss killing it, bullet from the pistol, was a matter of utter impossibility, unless willfully. Handing the weapon, he pointed it full of tail form to a form of a steady aim. Good trigger, explosion followed, and that bullet did its office. There could be no matter of doubt, for the figure gave a hailing shriek and fell headlong for the wall on the outside. I have shot him, cried Henry. I have shot him.